Will and turn over to Genesis chapter 2. We'll be beginning there in just a minute. Thank you for the invitation to be with you this week. I've been looking forward to it, and I hope that our messages are going to be helpful this week to you. I want to begin this morning by something that all parents know, and that is the way that you get a child to touch something is to say, "Don't touch it." If there's anything in your house that you want your child to touch, just give him that command. And it seems like that oftentimes children are motivated by that, but not only children, sometimes as adults we're motivated by that, that if something is put off limits, it seems like there's just this driving desire to do it. And so because of that, some people have said that God was kind of playing a dirty trick on Adam and Eve. Here within the Garden of Eden, he put the tree of life, but he also put the tree of knowledge of good and evil and said, stay away from it. A lot of folks have said, well, that was the certain way to get Adam and Eve to touch that tree was to tell them not to. So is that what God was doing when he did all of that? Was God playing kind of a dirty trick on Adam and Eve? Well, some people come to this and they say, well, this is the only way God could teach free will. That he had to present a choice to them. And yes, to an extent that's true. However, I think that's somewhat lacking, don't you? Certainly the devil didn't need a tree of knowledge of good and evil to practice free will. He found a way to compromise the word of God. So what's going on as we think about the tree of knowledge of good and evil? Well, as we begin our meeting this morning, I want us to start at the beginning. I want us to talk about that. Because there is a lesson taught in this tree that God continues to teach us. And that if we are going to be faithful to Him, we had better learn it. We had better come to appreciate it just as Adam and Eve should have done. So as we consider all of that this morning, let's go back to the very beginning, to the time when God is doing the initial creating. We'll not go through the whole creation account, but look in particular at His creation of man. So we're in chapter 2, and we go down to verse 5 to begin with. And here's what God tells us. He says, when no brush of the field was yet in the land, and no small plant of the field had yet sprung up, for the Lord had not caused it to rain on the land, and there was no man to work the ground. And the mist was going up from the land and was watering the whole face of the ground. Then the Lord God formed the man of dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And the man became a living creature. We've probably heard that so much, it doesn't leave us in awe as it should. But here is our beginning. Here's where God is saying, I want you to know how you came about, and it was all through me. I formed you, I gave you life, I gave you the breath of life, and it's through that that you became a living creature. Now, depending on your translation, verse 8 may sound a little different from the way that I'm going to read it, but yet I want you to listen to how the text reads. When in verse 8 it says, the Lord God planted a garden in Eden in the east, and there he put the man whom he had formed. What we find is that once God creates man, God leads him to the Garden of Eden. That's a point that I didn't see for a very long time, but yet a very important point to us because it's giving us a picture of man's salvation. Here, God is leading him to paradise. Here, God is taking a man and taking him to this relationship where they can be together. And isn't that what we're after? So here at the very beginning, with Adam, he's illustrating what he's going to do for all of the descendants of Adam who would follow after him. So man is created. Man is led into the garden. And as we begin to read about the Garden of Eden, trees are going to dominate the topic. In fact, what God is going to tell us is that there were trees of every kind within the garden. And the abundance there, again, is giving us a picture of God. I think to understand Eden, we've got to compare Eden with understanding God. Because here is paradise on earth. Here is the place where man and God are coming together, where they're having this union. And so even in the surroundings, as God provides all of these things, Adam and Eve could look around in the garden. They could see the abundance that God had provided them in showing that God could do anything. But even more than that, the trees were pleasant. The trees were nourishing. The trees provided everything they needed. Isn't that God? That as we think about Him, He's pleasant. He's nourishing. He's providing everything we need. So here within the garden is a picture of God. As man and woman are walking in it, everything is bespeaking His divinity. Now, of that abundance, two trees are singled out. And so God says there's two trees within the garden. One of these trees being the tree of life, in which He said, you can freely eat of this tree and live. And in fact, what we find is that through the remainder of the Bible, that tree of life keeps popping up. It's interesting to watch, even in the wisdom literature, where God will say, this particular idea is a tree of life. And then when we get to Revelation, we find it once again. So God is saying, here is the tree that represents eternal life. Here is the tree representing how you can live in me. The other tree, the tree of knowledge of good and evil, God says, of this tree, if you eat of it, you'll surely die. Now, we take it from that, unfortunately, that it was a bad tree. In fact, sometimes in our minds, perhaps in the minds of children, we almost think of this tree as having a snarly appearance on it, you know, kind of like you'd see in a creepy horror movie or something. It's over in the corner. I don't believe that at all. These two trees probably looked like every other tree in the Garden of Eden. Yet God had made a distinction. God had said, this tree, eat of it and live. This tree, eat of it and you're going to die. Now again, let me reiterate, both of these were good trees. How do I know that? I know their creator. God created both of them. God put both of the trees in the garden. Both of them had their place in paradise. And thus, we understand that God is not playing a dirty trick on Adam and Eve. Instead, these trees were given for them to learn. They were both placed there for good. Now, how do we know that God just simply did not place this tree in the garden to be some kind of abject temptation for them, some way of getting them to fall? Well, the book of James is going to help us with that. As we think about this, that neither of these trees was to tempt man to evil. The way we know that is to listen to what James says when he tells us about God. He says, let no one say when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God. That applied to Adam and Eve as well. They couldn't say, well, Lord, you put this tree here just to trip us up, just to mess us up. For God cannot be tempted to evil, and He Himself tempts no one. Therefore, we know that the tree of life and the tree of knowledge of good and evil had a distinct purpose for good. So let's talk about that. What was the good that this tree could do? To understand that, we got to think about the prohibition. Of the reasoning God would place a tree in the garden and markedly place that tree off limits to Adam and Eve. To understand this, let's think about the devil's temptations. I feel confident you know this account, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time here going back over it, but let's remind ourselves of a couple of things that the devil says to Eve as he begins to lure her away and begins to tempt her. One of the things in particular, he says, God has told you you're going to die. But the day that you eat of this tree, you will not surely die. Now, I believe that Eve, up to this point, had a pretty healthy understanding of the command of God. Look with me, if you will, to chapter 3, down to verse 3. As Eve is reciting the command to the devil here, she says, but God said, you shall not eat of the fruit of the tree that is in the midst of the garden. Neither shall you touch it, lest you die. I don't remember God ever putting the prohibition against touching it, but He had impressed Eve with that. Eve says, we can't eat of that tree. We can't even touch it. If we touch that tree, we're going to die. She got it. She understood the command.
And the devil comes along and he says,
"No, Eve, that's not correct." Well, was he telling the truth? Physically, at the moment, Adam and Eve were not going to fall dead if they ate of the tree. Now, the devil was leaving out the entire relationship with God and what would happen to that. And he was leaving out the fact that it would usher in death, but not at that very moment. And in fact, the devil continues to tempt people with that logic. So many people talk about the mythology of the Bible by coming to this text and saying, "You see, they didn't fall dead." No, that's not what God was intending. He was talking about that relationship with Him. He was talking about what would happen physically later on. Look at what else the devil says. He says, "You will know good from evil." And this is where we really want to focus in and hone in on this morning. Because that was right. Okay? They would know good from evil. In fact, the second they eat of that fruit, they know. So, what we've got here is somewhat of a contest. The devil is saying to them, "I want to teach you good and evil. I want you to trust me to understand the difference between good and evil, because that was the same object that God had in mind. God was going to use this tree to also teach them good and evil." So the devil is placing God in this competition, and here's Adam and Eve, and they are going to be willing partners on the devil's side in this, not trusting God. Because God wanted to teach them this in a very different way. God wanted to teach them because He had the way that was going to bring them to a full and rich understanding of good and evil in the context of godliness, in the context of who He is, and in the context of what He wanted them to be. That's how He wanted to do it. There's an interesting passage that we find over in Deuteronomy chapter 1 that I think kind of helps us to understand this. He says in chapter 1, verse 39, talking to the Israelites who are about to go into the land of Canaan, he says, "And as for your little ones," he's reciting their history here, "who you said would become a prey, and your children who today have no knowledge of good and evil, they shall go in there, and to them I will give it, and they shall possess it." God was saying of the generation of Israelites who would go into the land of Canaan, "I'm going to teach them that difference in my way." The former Israelites, the older generation, they had rebelled. They had gone on the side of Satan just as Eve did in threatening God and not believing Him and not trusting His plan. And God says, "With this generation, I'm going to make them aware through my way." And that's exactly what He wanted to do for Adam and Eve. He wanted to bring them to an understanding of righteousness in His way. And the only way that was going to happen was to first learn to trust Him. Now that's important. That as one is seeking to understand the difference between right and wrong, the difference between good and evil, it means you've got to first learn to trust that God knows what He's talking about. Now, when we understand that, we're beginning to understand the tree of knowledge of good and evil a little bit better. This tree represented trust in God. So think of those two trees together. One offers life, one offers trust. One eat of it and live, one refrain from it and show that you know who God is and that you can depend on Him and that you can believe the things that He tells you. And in these prohibitions, learn that God is teaching you how to be godly through learning to discern, through learning to separate, through learning to trust. Well, we know what happens, don't we? Though God had given all of these things and had tried to get them to learn, Eve eats of that tree. And she gives to her husband Adam, and he eats also. And thus we find in Genesis chapter 3, the first sin. Well, let's examine that sin. Let's think about what God is saying is a sin here.
And one of the things we find in this direct rebellion, which is what sin is all about, a very keen source of the devil's ability to tempt us towards sin, and that's by offering a shortcut. You ever been on someone's shortcut before? Now, I'm not going to ask you to, but if I ask, how many of you have gotten in some pretty serious trouble by taking someone's shortcut before? I imagine I'd see a bunch of hands go up in this room. I remember one time somebody gave me a shortcut to the place I was supposed to be preaching at 7 o'clock, and I arrived at 7:15. That was not a good thing. That was not a good shortcut. Typically, what a shortcut means is trying to go around something quite necessary. Something very important, and certainly in this case, that was the case, that here the devil is saying, I know what God told you. I know what He said to you, but I've got a better plan. I've got a better way. I've got an easier way. Let's think about what He's saying to them. I'm going to do something I rarely do, and that's put up a lengthy quote. But I want you just to look at this quote with me. As a man by the name of Franz Delitzsch was contemplating these things, this is what he wrote. He said, man learned the difference between good and evil from his own guilty experience, and by receiving the evil into his own soul, fell victim to the threatened death. Thus, through his own fault, the true, which should have helped him to attain true freedom, brought nothing but a sham liberty of sin, and with it death, and that without any demoniacal power of destruction being conjured into the tree itself, or any fatal poison being hidden in its fruit. Delitzsch says, this is not a Disney fairy tale. This isn't where the wicked witch has put poison in the apple and you innocently eat the apple. Instead, he says, this is where God said, don't do it, and the devil offered a shortcut saying, go ahead and do it, and man, desiring that shortcut, ate of it, disobeying God. And the tree that had been offered for good became something quite evil. A little more concisely, we find John Collins said, God intended that through this tree, humans would come to know good and evil, either from above as masters of temptation or from below as slaves of sin. What God wanted, He wanted us to master those things, to understand that godliness meant denying the things that go against Him and doing the things that are right and trusting in Him. And thus, what do we find then? Man and woman, at the very outset, rejected becoming divine partners with God. God has offered humanity, whenever humanity has lived, the grand opportunity to partake of His divine nature, to become like Him. And here at the very outset, God put them in paradise to learn that, gave them this opportunity. Yet what did they do? They failed that. And instead of trusting God to become partners with Him, they sought to rival Him. God had said one way, but they wanted a different way. God had said, this is my way. They said, we want the shortcut. And that idea of separation, they learned it. But they learned it in a very bad way, didn't they? Because this paradise that God had given them, chapter 3 and verse 22 says, since you have become like me, I'm taking the tree of life away from you. You are outside of paradise because you didn't trust me. Let's take all that and let's see why God records it for us. Anything we find in the Old Testament is there for us to learn a lesson. That's the purpose of history. It's recorded so that we can learn. And as we think about Adam and Eve and this tree of knowledge of good and evil, we're going to learn a lot about God and a lot about us and a lot about the devil and a lot about sin. And so as we consider God's way, God is still making the same offer. He has called us to partake in that divine nature. He's called us to that holiness that He promises. And we need to be ready to partake of that, but it's trusting Him. It's trusting that God knows best. And it's seeing that although mankind has messed up in so many ways previously, in 2017, God is still making that plea. Come to me. Trust in me. Be a part of my family. Be a part of who I am.
Let's see how he did that with Israel. Time passes, God's people grow into a major nation, and God is going to give them a law to try to teach them the same lesson
that the tree of knowledge of good and evil was to teach Adam and Eve. And throughout this law, he teaches that idea of separation. He gives all of these prohibitions in order to teach people, his people, who he is and what he wants. Let's look at a passage together. This is Leviticus chapter 20. One of many places within the law we could turn to make this point. But I want us to focus on the negatives. I want us to focus on the prohibitions here. As he begins in verse 22, he says, "You shall therefore keep all my statutes and all my rules and do them, that the land where I am bringing you may live, to live may not vomit you out." What then? "And you shall not walk in the customs of the nation that I am driving out before you. For they did all these things, and therefore I detested them. But I have said to you, you shall inherit their land, and I will give it to you to possess, a land flowing with milk and honey. I am the Lord your God who has separated you from these people. You shall therefore separate the clean beast from the unclean, and the unclean bird from the clean. You shall not make yourselves detestable by beast or by bird or by anything with which the ground crawls, which I have set apart for you to hold unclean. You shall be holy to me, for I, the Lord, am holy and have separated you from the peoples that you should be mine." That is the same offer he was making Adam and Eve. The same offer of separate to me.
You ever read through the book of Leviticus?
It's not exciting reading. It's not something that's just going to keep you turning every page with enthusiasm, but it is so important. And in your reading, have you ever wondered, well, why does God say this animal is unclean and this animal's clean? After all, is a pig really any cleaner than a cow? You know, is this bird really any cleaner than that bird? That's not the point. God is not doing this because those animals held some kind of high nutritional value. God is doing it to say, trust me. Trust that what I tell you is right, and if I say don't eat from this animal, don't eat from that animal. That's the point. Now, you can abound in that in the law. Don't sew this fabric and that fabric. Don't plow with this animal and that animal. And over and over and over, God is making that point. You see, throughout the Bible, wherever we go, Genesis, Leviticus, New Testament, doesn't matter. The idea is that if you are going to partake of the divine nature, you must trust. And that means certain things are off limits.
Wouldn't it have been wonderful if Israel had learned that? If they had gotten that lesson down so that they could then be what God wanted them to be?
God desired them not only to be His people, but kind of as the showcase where nations of the world who had abandoned God could look and say, now that's what I want to be. Sadly though, as Adam and Eve ate from that forbidden fruit, in a metaphorical sense, so did Israel. They trusted in shortcuts. They trusted in things that went against God. And so with that failure, the true Israel comes on the scene. The one who would represent what it truly means to be a son of God, who in many ways in his life embodies everything that was offered to Israel in which they failed, yet he succeeded. And I want you to note here the idea that we find with Jesus Christ. As he lives his life as the example that Israel should have been. Look at what we find. Jesus taught,
if you are going to be a faithful son, it's not a cafeteria style measure. Whatever God has said do, and whatever God has said don't do, trust him. Believe him.
The Hebrew writer puts it in very forceful terms, doesn't he? In chapter 5, verses 8 through 10, talking about Jesus, he says, although he was a son, he learned obedience through what he suffered. think that's such an important passage. Here's Jesus Christ, divinity, who's known the glories of heaven, learning obedience. Why? Because he was deficient in it? No. Because he was teaching us. He was showing us what it means to be a true son. He learned obedience through what he suffered. And being made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation to all who obey him, being designated by God a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. Was Jesus ever offered a shortcut? Yes. On many occasions he was offered the same thing that Adam and Eve were offered, the same thing Israel was offered, but he wouldn't take it. He refused to take what the devil had to offer. I think a very interesting example of this, it's over in John chapter 6. This is kind of at the height of his popularity. The people are thronging around him, and he says, "Perceiving then that they were about to come and take him by force and make him king, Jesus withdrew to the mountain by himself." Didn't Jesus want to be king? Absolutely. Doesn't Jesus want to be our king? Absolutely. Here was a nice little shortcut. Jesus said, absolutely not. This is not the plan of God. Jesus could have had his palace. He could have been set up in Jerusalem. He could have had a ready-made army of zealots and others at his side ready to go against Rome. That wasn't the way, though. And though that might have in the short term offered something better, and I'm putting that term better in quotes, Jesus said no. But perhaps the greatest shortcut offer that we find is actually in that series of temptations we're told about as the devil comes to him and tries to get him to sin against his father. It says the devil took him on a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to him, "All these I will give you if you will fall down and worship me." You ever thought about that temptation? If I understand this correctly, what the devil is saying is this. You see all these folks? Bow down and worship me and I'll leave them alone. They're off limits. You can have them. Just bow down. Now, what would that mean? Jesus gets what he wants. Jesus doesn't have to go through the crucifixion. Jesus doesn't have to go through the pain leading up to it. Sounds like a pretty good deal, doesn't it? What'd Jesus say? Jesus said to him, "Be gone, Satan. For it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve." Jesus said, "I have no interest in the forbidden fruit. I have no interest in trying to defy the plan of the Father so that I can get something a little bit easier." And in that, he sets the example that you and I are to follow when it comes to discerning, when it comes to choosing between right and wrong, when it comes to listening to the prohibitions of God. So let's make that very practical for us. When we think about our lives, let's not any of us think that we're not going to go through the same thing Adam and Eve went through. Now, there may not be a tree there, and that might not be the exact temptation in its form, but the same temptation is there. So what do we do? In that learning to discern, let me say it one more time. I got to learn to trust. I got to learn to believe that God knows what he's talking about. And this only happens when I allow God to raise me. When I allow God to bring me from spiritual infancy to maturity, trusting him every step of the way. Let me ask you, did you always understand your parents' reasoning? Did you always agree with them? Did you always think they know absolutely everything correct? No. But if you respect your parents, you trust them. If you respected your parents, you said, "Though I don't fully understand this, I'm going to follow you." And they raised you. That's what God wants to do. Listen to what he says again from Hebrews. Solid food belongs to the mature. For those who have their powers of discernment trained by constant practice to distinguish good from evil. God says, "I'm raising you to know the difference. I'm raising you to understand what it means to be right and what it means to be wrong, to bring us from that milk to maturity. And so practically speaking, if I am allowing God to bring me into that divine nature, it means I better beware of the shortcuts. I better not listen. When the devil tries to tell me there is a better way, let's go back and compare with what he told Eve. You remember when he said you cannot trust God? He says to her, you shall not surely die. I find it very interesting that the first temptation given to mankind was the temptation to not trust God's judgment. The first temptation was saying you cannot trust what he tells you. He is not a fair judge. I got to avoid that temptation. And thus, rather than listening to the devil's reasoning, I stand with the Apostle Paul when he says, for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may receive what is due for what he has done in the body, whether good or evil. Paul says to us, we are going to stand in front of the throne of Christ, and we are going to be judged by his standard. We're going to be judged by what he's told us to do. And if I believe I can somehow get there and be right with God without doing that, I am totally deceived. And as Adam and Eve were kicked out of paradise, I can trust that the same will happen to me. The standards are God's, and I must believe him. Here's the one, though, that I believe gets more people, perhaps, than any other. And that's the belief that God really doesn't want what's best for you. You remember the temptation that he gives to Eve? He said to the woman, did God actually say? You ever paid attention to that word actually? You throw that word in when you're trying to cast doubt. Now, is that what your mother actually said, or are you trying to deceive me? You ever told your kid that? That's what the devil's doing. He says, did God actually say, you shall not eat of any tree in the garden? Is he trying to hold something back from you, Eve? Has he got something up his sleeve and he doesn't want you to know about it? No. We don't fall for that temptation. We, as Amos commanded the Israelites and thus us, to seek good and not evil, that we may live, so that the Lord, the God of hosts, will be with you. As you have said, hate evil and love good and establish justice in the gate. It may be that the Lord, the God of hosts, will be gracious to the remnant of evil. Hate evil, love good, trust in God. That's what he says. Think again about the Apostle Paul's admonition as he writes to Timothy. He says, but God's firm foundation stands bearing this seal. The Lord knows those who are his, and let everyone who names the name of the Lord depart from iniquity. That's the difference between right and wrong. And that is solid, black and white, concrete fact that if we are going to stand with God, it's going to be on his terms. But let's think about one more thing. As the devil offered all of these shortcuts, what he ultimately said is that you can be like God by a different plan than God offers you. Eat what he told you not to eat, and you will be like him, knowing good from evil. How many times do we find that same old temptation peddled over and over and over? That although this is what the book says, it is not what God means. What did the devil say? For you know when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened. You know an easy word we could put there? You'll be enlightened. And you will be like God. What does God tell us about that temptation? Let's go back to Hebrews 5. Solid food is for the mature, for those who have their powers of discernment trained by constant practice. That's what it's all about. The idea that if we are going to know the ways of God, it is understanding Him, and to understand Him requires constant training, where we'll go in the next lesson. But as we put all of this together, what God is saying to us is, I'm giving you the way and the plan. You need to follow it. And thus Proverbs chapter 9 and verse 10 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the holy is understanding. When I can come to terms that God is the boss, when I can come to terms with I know nothing outside of Him, I'm going to learn what the tree of knowledge of good and evil should have taught Adam and Eve. Appreciate your good attention this morning and look forward to continuing our studies and our worship together.